Serial 1. The Nickel Bag. By Art Oak. Available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. The Nickel Bag. Copyright 1978. By Arcade Oak. P.O. Box 690444. Houston, Texas 77269. It has been said, into each life a little rain must fall. One can only hope it hits with the gentleness of a snowflake and not the sting of a hailstone. Prologue. Fact: opium is a drug that serves as a source of several legal medicines, including cocaine and morphine. Heroin, another drug, is illegal. It is also made from opium. Opium and most opiate drugs made from or containing opium can and do cause addiction if used in excess. Opium is extracted from the juice of the opium poppy. Most of the poppies come from the Middle East, Mexico, and Southeast Asia. Processors near the poppy fields make dried poppy juice called raw opium into a brownish powder known as refined opium. Drug manufacturers use refined opium and morphine base to make codeine, morphine and other medicines. Heroin and most other illegal opiates are made from morphine base. Most of the illegal opiates are made in France, Latin America, the Middle East and Southeast Asia, with the southwest part of France and the Netherlands being two of the main distribution centers. The use of opium when prescribed as a drug has been found to be used before the time of Christ, over 6,000 years ago in the Middle East. Aurangabian traders took opium to China and India and probably started the drug culture there in about 600 AD. The Chinese first used the drug as a medicine. European traders introduced opium smoking into China in the early 1600s. The Chinese government outlawed opium in China in the early 1700s, but traders continued to trade it for silk, porcelain and other Chinese products. In the late 1700s, opium addiction became widespread among the Chinese. This opium trade helped cause the so-called Opium War, in which England defeated China. During the 1800s, people in the United States and Europe could buy laudanum, morphine and other opiates legally and with negation out of prescription. By 1900, at least 200,000 Americans had become addicted to opiates. Strict drug laws were passed in the early 1900s, which greatly reduced the problem in the United States. Addiction to opiates, particularly heroin, began to increase again in the late 1940s and continued to today's epidemic proportions. Viewed from across Fifth Avenue, the young girl seen hurrying toward the phone booth looked extremely attractive. Her long brown hair was worn in a straight cut that fell to the middle of her back. The below-the-knee-length skirt she was wearing was in the latest mod style, and the brown boots that came up to mid-calf accentuated the bright-colored long-sleeved blouse that she wore. She was searching frantically through the large, over-the-shoulder, expensive leather handbag. Searching through a small pocketbook full of large bills, she finally discovered the 20 cents change she needed for the desperate phone call she was about to make. Pushing open the door of the phone booth, the girl stepped in and slammed the door shut behind her. As attractive and shapely the girl looked from across the street, should one approach closer, they would begin to notice small flaws. She was definitely in an aggravated state. Stuffing the dime in the slot and then attempting to stuff the two nickels in the nickel slot, the girl dropped one on the bottom of the phone booth and exclaimed, "Goddamn!" as she bent quickly to pick it up and stuff it forcefully into the phone. She was trying to dial so quickly, she misdialed on the third number and, uttering another profanity, she slammed the receiver down and groped for her return coins. Stabbing the coins back into the slot for the second try, she forced her negation self to slow the dialing down so that this time she heard the phone ring on the other end. To an avid girl watcher, some of the caller's actions may have appeared peculiar. The girl kept rubbing her nose with the back of her hand and pinching the end of it as if she had a very bad cold, or as she was also rubbing the top and the length of it, an itch on her nose. As attractive as she appeared from a distance, the closer one got, the more haggard and drawn she looked. Her eyes were runny as if crying, and very red. The casual, innocent observer would figure the girl had been crying due to a stomachache, as the girl kept doubling over and rubbing her stomach and nose and wiping her eyes. Her actions appeared desperate as she sought out the change and then dialed the number. It also would give credence to the casual observer that the girl was in some sort of trouble. The ringing sounded hollow and far away. "Ring, ring, ring." "Yeah," responded a crude, deep voice on the other end. "Julio, Julio, Eva got to score. Eva got to score. Imsik. Can you help me? Who the hell is this? Julio, this is Nancy. Eva got to make a cop. Sick, Imsik. You've got to help me, you've got to help me.
Listen, you snooty broad, I told you what it was gonna cost you next time.
Julio, I can't. I just can't. But Imsik. Imsik, you have to help me, Julio. Please, please.
Imsik. The girl in the phone booth was crying by this time. Her eyes were watering with tears besides the red, runny look, and she kept clutching her stomach and doubling over as if her stomach cramps were more than she could bear.
Look, bitch, I told ya, next time you want a cop with me, it's gonna cost ya. Are you ready?
Julio, please.
Eva got the money. Eva got the cash. Eva got the cash. Please, Julio.
Okay, Nancy baby, cool it. I'll take care of you. Sounds to me like you're ready to pay the price. You get your ass over to Charlie's place and take care of him like I told ya, and if he's satisfied, hell, give me a call. And then you can stop by and he'll give you your little pop of stuff. You don't take care of Charlie like he needs to be taken care of, and I mean you go all out, baby, or you don't get nothing. You just stay sick.
My God, Julio, my God, I can't do that.
Eva got the money. I'll pay, I'll pay.
Goddamn right you'll pay. You go over there and screw old Charlie's brains out like I told ya, and then I'll consider taking care of ya. Now move it, bitch. You call me when you're finished with Charlie and I'll set up a meeting for ya.
The slamming of the receiver made the girl jump back from the phone. She was in tears and had actual physical pain by now. She slowly hung up the phone and, clutching her stomach, pushed open the door of the phone booth and staggered back out onto the crowded sidewalk.
What's the problem, miss? Asked a passing pedestrian.
May I help you? Do you need help?
No. Get away from me, get away.
I'm okay, she stammered as she pushed away and walked on up the sidewalk quickly.
Oh, my God, I can't let that filthy pig touch me, she thought. I just can't stand the thought of his fat, pudgy fingers touching my bare skin. My God, what am I to do?
I'm sick, my stomach. I won't do it. I just won't. I can't stand that filthy pig.
With that thought in her mind, she broke into a run for her car. Slamming her car into gear, she whipped it into the traffic and made her way towards Charlie's place. By the time Charlie finished with Nancy, she was really sick. The mental disgust and the physical nausea that she felt having let that fat, filthy, foul-smelling Charlie paw her and sexually abuse her, no longer even registered with her. The second that Charlie had opened the door to her frantic knocking, she knew that she was in for some of the most physical and sexual abuse and debasement known. The look on Charlie's face told her that the worst, the foulest things that he could think of were soon to be demanded and expected of her. When Charlie slammed the door and ordered her to strip and prepare for him, she tried to blank everything out of her mind, but all that remained was the mental anguish and physical sickness that she felt in her mind and stomach. The afternoon drug on for an eternity as Charlie foisted upon her every sexual deviation his sick mind could con negation jury. The only thing that kept the girl close to sanity was the fact that Charlie and Julio stood between her and being able to become well again.
Get your ass out of here, you filthy whore.
With the expletive ringing in her ears, the girl rushed down the stairs. She had not even bothered to wash up after the afternoon ravish negation meant. She hurriedly jumped into her car and took off for the long-awaited appointment with Julio to get the medicine her mind and body was now screaming for.
Charlie says you screwed him pretty good, baby, Julio laughingly threw up to the girl's face.
Yeah, in fact, he says he wouldn't mind having a little chunk of you again, so next time, baby, before you even call me, you go see Charlie.
Oh, please, Julio, please, please, let me have it now.
I'm sick, I am sick.
You snooty bitches are all the same.
Won't even look at us till you get that monkey on your back, then you come and beg us. Then you'd go down and do anything, you dirty pig. Here.
Where's the money?
But I paid Charlie.
You said, Julio, you said.
Shut up, bitch.
I said you had to take care of him, too. I didn't say it wasn't gonna cost ya.
Where's the bread?
Kman.
One nickel bag of stuff, $50.
Kman, put up, baby.
The girl would have looked so out of place in this old store negation room back of the Bowery Pool Hall,
If it hadn't been for the fact that she was so disheveled, her hair all tossed, her clothes disarrayed from the hurried way she had taken them off and replaced them earlier in the afternoon. Mascara was all over her face from the running of her eyes, and she had wiped her nose so much, it was all red and irritated looking. Only two things were left as a standout that she did not belong in a place like this. That was the cut and expensive look of her clothes, even though they were disheveled, plus the fact that she was so young. A person so young should not be in such a rundown and obviously derelict a condition. There was dirt, garbage, old bottle caps, bottles, filth, trash all over the floor. The room was very dark, and in the corners you could not see whether they were bodies or just more piles of old garbage crates. Julio, on the other hand, almost looked like he belonged in this atmosphere. He was a Spanish-American type. His hair was slicked back. He had a thin, pencil mustache that gave him a sinister look. His face was pockmarked from teenage acne that had never been treated and most likely had been exploited by popping the pimples. Julio was built on the slim and slimy side, as some would describe him. He was almost as short as the 55 girl that was now sniveling at his feet. Starting from his black, pointed toe shoes that were patent leather and kept shiny by his occasional lifting up and rubbing them against the back of his opposite leg to his greased down hair, he was slimy. His pants were of a light tan denim material with a large flower embroidered on the lower left outside leg panel, and they flared widely above his shoes so that just the points of the pointed black loafers could be seen. At the rear were 2.5-inch leather heels that gave him the only stature that he showed when he stood up wearing them. The long-sleeved bright yellow flowered sports shirt was unbuttoned to mid-chest, and the 3 rings of puka shells on the necklaces around his neck were displayed. The girl was thrashing through her purse, searching for the roll of large bills that she had placed in there that morning. Desperately she searched one end and then the other, and then with exasperation, dumped all the contents of her purse out on the dirty floor in front of her and scrambled through it with her fingers. Then, breaking a couple of her long, finely manicured nails in her haste, her hands suddenly lurched forward like a falcon grabbing an unsuspecting prey and latched onto the money purse. She tore it open and quickly extracted 2 $50 bills. Thrusting the money at Julio, she screamed, "Gimme a dime bag, gimme a dime bag." Julio laughed at her and said, "Here, baby, here's 2 nickel bags for your monkey. Go ahead. Fix yourself." Picking up the cork-removed bottle cap that read Coors Bear on one side that was lying in the pile of curios found in most women's purses, she grabbed her eyebrow tweezers and holding the edge of the Coors cap, she emptied half of the nickel bag into the lid. Not having any water available, she then spit into the lid and quickly mixed the white powder and the liquid from her mouth until it was fairly well dissolved. Then she struck a match and holding it under the bottle cap with one hand, and the bottle cap with the eyebrow tweezers with the other, she watched the white powder and spit slowly dissolve into one clear pool of liquid. Dropping the match and not really caring whether it was out or not, she reached around through her mass of belongings and grabbed up her needle or works, as it is known in the trade. Carefully setting the bottle cap on the floor in front of her, she grabbed her package of cigarettes and not having any cotton available, she tore the filter off one of her cigarettes, bit off a small chunk and dropped it into the bottle cap. Then, taking her works and placing the point of the needle directly on the small piece of cellulose, she drew the liquid into the chamber of the syringe. The cellulose, and she preferred to use cotton when it was available, was to filter out any impurities that might be in this particular hit. Holding her works in her right hand, she reached down and clumsily untied the rope belt that she was wearing. Quickly pulling the rope belt through the hoops of her skirt, she reached up and wrapped it twice around her upper arm, and holding one end of the rope in her mouth, she pulled on the other end till it was tight. By this time, the girl was so sick and had so much to forget in the previous afternoon for what she had had to pay for this moment of pleasure, she knew that a simple skin pop or just placing the heroin underneath the skin was not going to be enough. So, she carefully laid the syringe down with the needle lying on the bottle cap and unbuttoned the button on her left sleeve. Quick negationly pulling the peasant blouse up over the rope she was holding tight against her upper arm, she pressed 4 or 5 times with her thumb hard into the crook of her elbow, and seeing the veins stand out, she reached down, picked up the works and inserted the needle directly into the vein. She pulled back on the needle on the syringe plunger just enough to register. The minute she saw the blood pouring into the syringe capsule and starting to mix with the liquid there, She slowly pushed the plunger down and shot the painkiller directly into her being. Leaving the needle still inserted in her vein, she released her belt from her mouth and let the rope that had been wrapped around her arm slowly be negation come loosened. She pulled the needle from her arm and at the same time pulled the rope away and down to her side on the floor. Still sitting on her knees, she closed her eyes and slowly rocked back on her heels and raised her head toward the ceiling, unseeing but waiting for that big boost, that painkiller, that time to get off. Hardly a minute had gone by but the girl could be seen to visibly change her appearance. Her face became less pained, less harsh. A slight smile started to play on her face as it was evening negation dent the physical pain that she had been feeling moments before was slowly lifting. Dumb bitch, Julio snorted half under his breath as he had tossed the two nickel bags to the sniveling girl on the floor in front of him. Crumbling the two $50 bills in his hand, he stuffed them in his pocket and pulled out a cigarette. Light negationing the cigarette, Julio leaned back against the wall and, scratch negationing his crotch, watched the girl prepare her liquid creeping death. Julio watched the girl's transformation with the knowledge that the two nickel bags that he had sold her would not last her a week with the way he had just seen her strung out. He knew that his broad was really getting hooked and he also knew what the price had already extracted. Any further prices would be just as easily foisted upon her. The nickel bag, or quarter teaspoon of smack, was only good for two hits. The $100 that she had paid for the two nickel bags, or two quarter teaspoons, would only give her four shots, or four of those happy times that she was so desperately seeking. Next time, he thought, maybe I can make 200 for the same amount. I'll get Charlie to set up a couple of his buddies at 25 bucks a pop and I'll make this snooty bitch go up and ball em all and then still pay for it here. The pain was now gone and a wonderful sense of euphoria came in its place. With the euphoria came the realization of what she had done during the afternoon. A twinge of nausea came to her throat and the bile of her stomach suddenly could be tasted in her mouth. But she knew, as sickening and as nauseous as the entire situation had been, the sickness that she had felt before she had gotten this fix was worse. She opened her eyes and Julio could see her pupils were small and fine little pinpoints. The other signs that she had gotten off were evident. She started itching, first her arm, then her shoulder and then with her other hand, her upper leg. Julio knew it wouldn't be long before she would have such a sweet tooth that she would be popping lifesavers and other sweets like one would take cigarettes when they were a heavy smoker on right after another. Seeing the look of disgust on her face, Julio knew he was about to receive a vicious tongue lashing from the now satiated girl on the floor in front of him. You rotten, filthy pig, as she screamed at him, no longer need negationing his life-saving white powder. You made me visit that lousy, filthy garbage. I'm disgusted, I'm sick. Julio laughed in her face and said, not as sick as you were, baby. Or as sick as you're gonna be again and yell go visit Charlie again and yell ball his brains out just like this time and the next time, I'm gonna make sure he has four or five of his friends there with him. The girl got a look of absolute disgust and even fear on her face as she realized what Julio said may be true. Carefully stuffed negation thing the other bag and a half of white powder into her brassiere, which she turned her back half to Julio to do. She turned back and quickly scooped up all the items that she had dumped out on the floor from her purse and stuffed them back into it, stood up and smoothed out her skirt. She pulled down the sleeve of her blouse and rebuttoned it. Nancy quickly pushed her rope belt back through her skirt hoops, tied it, draped her leather purse over her shoulder and turned toward the door. Remember, bitch, called Julio as she walked out, next time you're sick. Your medicine is not only going to cost you the usual price but you're going to take care of Charlie and four or five of his buddies. Ha 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 ha. As the door slammed, Nancy felt as many do when stating, someone's walking on my grave a cold, clammy and eerie loneliness. But then the feeling quickly passed as she felt so good and so peaceful with the world. She patted this light lump of painkiller in her left breast bra and walked up the filthy alley back to her car. She knew that right now everything was fine and beautiful. Julio watched the door slam behind the girl and with that sinister smile on his face, scratched his crotch and spat. The spit hit the dust much like a raindrop on an unpaved country road, blowing dirt up and out in a pattern and leaving a small wet pool in the center. He shrugged and turned and walked back toward the table inside the pool hall. The girl that Julio had just supplied was not much different or unlike in her need as many thousands of others that he and hundreds like him serviced every day. Julio was just one of the small cogs in the distribution machine of the Santini family. The scene that occurred there in the back of that filthy, dirty pool hall storeroom was being repeated in hundreds and hundreds of like places all over New York City, in thousands and thousands of places all over the United States. Heroin and dealing in heroin is big business. The two nickel bags that the girl had just purchased were just like millions and millions of like nickel bags that were being purchased all over the world. The street price is $50 for the equivalent of 1 gram, which would equal 2 fixes or pops. Each gram or quarter teaspoon, also known as a nickel bag, had been cut by either lactose or milk sugar 93% or 95%, leaving only 5 to 7% actual heroin or stuff in each nickel bag. The Santini family's business formula was to cut it to only 5% smack. 1 pound of pure heroin, or 95 to 98%, which is about as pure as you can refine it, 1 pound of pure heroin or 16 ounces, can be cut into 44 nickel bags or 1 gram, also known as quarter teaspoons. Each quarter teaspoon then would be cut by 95%, leaving only 5% pure heroin in the lactose mixture. Thus, half a kilo would equal 66,880 saleable nickel bags. Each nickel bag costs, in the street parlance, a nickel or $50. So half a kilo or 1 pound of the pure heroin on street value is worth over $3 million. A nickel bag of pure heroin or 1 gram, after being cut into saleable condition, could be made into 95 nickel bags over 4,500. Even a real hard mainliner of heroin would probably overdose on any street heroin much stronger than 8 to 9%. That's why the Santini family makes one of their business ventures the trafficking of narcotics. The unceasing roar of the surf below his cabin window brought Scott slowly to wakefulness. He reached out with his hand and softly felt around the bed as if seeking something. As his eyes slowly opened, he discovered that he was, in fact, alone. She must have left sometime, either during the night or during the early morning hours, he thought. With a couple of muffled groans, Scott rolled over, stretched and sat up, throwing his long legs over the side of the bed. The room looked much cleaner than it had the night before. She must have cleaned up a little bit before she left, shaking his head. His clothes were laid neatly over the chair, instead of in the rumpled mess where they had been hastily discarded the night before. Stretching again and unconsciously scratching the ugly scar on his shoulder, Scott slowly rose and made for the bath negation room. Consciously forcing himself to quit rubbing at the scarred shoulder, Scott willed himself to believe the itching was strictly psychological. Remembering when he had been hit by the Viet Cong shrapnel, he again assured himself it was all out of his system and merely an unconscious reaction. Damn, he thought. It's been 4 years since I was hit with that damn Viet Cong shell and here it still seems to bother me. He adjusted the shower and quickly stepped in commencing to wash his dark blonde hair. Damn it, said Scott as he bumped his head against the shower nozzle. Someday I am going to have a shower stall that is large enough so I can stand up and take a decent shower. His 62 frame was rather tall for the shower head that protruded above the bathtub. Having finished his shower, he briskly rubbed down his 210-pound frame. Scott stepped into a pair of double-knit checkered slacks and slipped a colorful pullover knit shirt over his head. Glancing at the clock, Scott saw it was 8:30 in the morning and a beautiful morn negationing it was. It was the 2nd of April and one of the most beautiful mornings that Scott had seen in some time on the Santa Cruz, California beach. The air was clear and warm. Peering out the kitchen window, he could see Monterey far off in the distance across Santa Cruz Monterey Bay. The only blemish on the entire horizon was the steam and smoke rising from the Moss Landing PGE power plant and Kaiser Refractory. The weather and the scenery this morning is enough to make that 40-minute drive over the Santa Cruz Hill to San Jose well worth the effort, thought Scott as he spread his breakfast of buttered toast and sausage on the table. He was on his second bite of sausage when he heard the muffled roar of the Porsche engine of Rob's car pulling into the driveway. Hum, mused Scott. Rob must have been on a long case last night. He is normally home earlier in the morning. Glancing out the window, Scott saw Rob's fire engine red Porsche Spyder swing into the driveway and come to a screeching halt. As Rob uncoiled his compact 6-foot frame from behind the Spyder's steering wheel, Scott could see Rob's beard and long dark flowing locks that fit in perfectly with the hippie crowd that hung out at the Catalyst in downtown Santa Cruz. In fact, whenever Scott joined Rob for a sandwich at the Catalyst restaurant, it was Scott that was out of place among the long-haired and mostly bearded group. Even the fact that both Scott and Rob were in their late 20s did not seem to hinder their abilities to intermingle with the free-thinking crowd that hung out at the delicatessen sandwich shop. The influence of the University of California at Santa Cruz was constantly in evidence. Rob was carrying his handgun as he entered the house and tossed the paper to Scott. "Hey, buddy. How goes the action?" asked Rob as he stepped to the closet and tucked his snub-nosed police special on the top shelf along with his wallet holding his undercover, narcotics squad badge. "We made a fantastic bust last night," Rob continued. "Someone from Motors happened along some dude laying in the gutter behind First Street, you know, the Dirty Flicks movie house. Someone had just beaten the shit out of him. As they were checking the guy out, they found out he was carrying some suspicious-looking balloons. So the guys on the motors hauled him into the slammer and called us in. Well, the stuff checked out to be coke cut about 80%, continued Rob as he fixed himself some breakfast and joined Scott at the table. "Anyway," he went on, "we gave him his rights, and since this was his third narc offense in the past 2 years, he was sweating it. Seems as though he burned somebody about 3 months ago with some lousy junk, and it turned out they belonged to the Hells Angels. Well, they passed the word and it was to get him. They wrapped him good and he felt they were going to kill him, so he agreed to work with us. He would wear some sound equipment and go in with some of our undercover officers and try to make a buy." "So, what happened?"
"Hey man, just a minute," said Rob between bites. "I'm hungry. We were on that stakeout for 6 hours. This is the first Eva had to eat since 10 o'clock last night." "As I was saying," Rob washed down his last bit of sausage and toast with a sip of coffee, "we wired the mark up and sent him in with Terry. You remember Terry, don't you? He is the guy who used to play professional football but hurt his knee. Since he graduated from San Jose State in criminology and dug the undercover scene, he worked into the narc squad. So," continued Rob, "there was the dude wired up and along with Terry they go tripping into the Scores house. I'm set up on the next corner in a panel truck monitoring the sound equipment. Now we have 4 other cars, all unmarked, at different corners of the block, so if there is any hint of trouble, we can hit it fast, but all we really want to do is get the evidence of a purchase on tape so we can go down to the judge and pick up a court order for a search warrant." "Man, that score went for that buy so slick. All the dude had to do was sound like he was begging for his life," drooled Rob as he slipped into the street land negation gauge that he had had to learn to be proficient in his job as an undercover narc officer. The entire buy only took about 35 minutes and Terry and the mark came trotting out. "We picked them up, got down to the judge, got our search warrant and were back at the house by 5:00 in the morning. They flushed about 10 balloons, but we got enough coke, barbiturates and, we believe, what looks like pure heroin, to nail those sons of bitches for a hell of a long time. A nickel bag of pure smack is a super grab. How come you got away so early? Even though you're home later than usual, the paperwork should have kept you longer." "Well, what I think happened," answered Rob, "was that the word got out that a big bust was going down and my relief on the day shift showed up early, so he came along on the arrest. So, since he was there, I just let him take over. I had already made out my reports, having sat around on the stakeout so long. It was just a matter of him finishing the paperwork."
"Hey man, this is Friday. Are you going to class today?" asked Rob.
"Yeah, I figure after my 5-hour session at the old law books yesterday afternoon I should make it to class to let the professor know I wasn't just goofing off. You know Rob, since you already graduated with a criminology degree from state, you should go ahead and go to law school. It would stand you in good stead for whatever you wanted to do. Especially since you keep talking like you want to join the FBI.
"Yeah man, you're right, but with all this working at night and with this narc detail I'm on, it just wouldn't work out. I've only got another 9 months to go in narcotics before I have the opportunity to transfer to another division if I want to. I'll give it some thought. Of course, the way I see you having to hit those books, I'm not sure I'm ready for that again."
"Whoa. Eva got to run," exclaimed Scott. "It's 900 and my first class is at 1015,
It's constitutional law and the professor really gets ticked if you come in late.
Hey, take the Porsche if you will be back by 6 o'clock, called Rob.
I would, answered Scott, but I have my laundry in my trunk and I don't have time to switch it. I have to drop it off today because I have a heavy date tomorrow night and I have to get my clothes clean.
Man, I'm down to nothing to wear.
Rob slowly stretched, yawned and scratched his head as he watched Scott jump into his Javelin and screech up the driveway and onto the main road on the way to San Jose. As he cleaned the table, Rob's eyes dropped to the newspaper laying there, sandwiched between yet another Mideastern war and a continuing political scandal that had been rocking the nation for months. Was an article where a noted criminologist reported that heroin addicts and the resulting heroin influx by syndicated criminals was on the uprise. Being a narc agent, Rob immediately sat down, propped his elbows on the table, cupped his chin and studied the article.
Goddamn, he thought. Those heavy dudes get away with that traffic every time.
As he studied the article, Rob read that top mafia and syndicate criminals were reportedly making hundreds of millions of dollars profit, non-taxable, every year, and the future looked even rosier. The article went on to say that as more people were raised, became addicted, it increased the coffers of the syndicate and their leaders.
Sure, thought Rob. We bust a little street pusher and maybe an intermediate jerk or two, but the big boys, those dudes who really make the bucks, get away totally free.
Rob started with this thought.
Scott.
Rob's thoughts went to his good friend, Scott.
Kerlump, kerlump, kapow, kapow.
All around Rob's ears were the deafening sounds of the mortar shells' deep-throated explosions and bullets whine as they whistled just over his head and on all sides. He could hear the screaming of the wounded on his left and right. Somewhere in the garbled language of the Vietnamese that he had lead, a couple of sounds were discernible as groans of his buddy Americans.
Goddamn!
Exclaimed Rob aloud. We certainly walked into this ambush.
Shit.
There is not a goddamn place to hide. The stench of the canal in which he was trying to bury himself was almost overpowering in itself, but the fear of even moving with the deafening sounds of the Holocaust on all sides kept him face down in the mud.